Thank you very much for that. I'm delighted to be here to be able to speak about financial reporting issues with respect to the carbon pricing mechanism and based on my experience doing research in the UK ETS. Now, my agenda for this afternoon is to talk about the status and trends in financial reporting, then look at two phases in Australia's carbon pricing and its reporting implications with respect to the fixed period phase and the flexible period phase, and then finally look at international developments, particularly the lessons learned from the UK ETS with respect to reporting implications. So what is the current state of financial reporting in terms of carbon emission permits? To cut the long story short, there is no definitive guidance at present. So there is no Australian accounting standards at present, and neither is there an international accounting standards. At best, what we've got would be references from IFRIC 3, which is entitled Emissions Rights, and IFRIC 3 is International Financial Reporting and Interpretations Committee. This was released in 2004. However, it was withdrawn shortly because of some accounting mismatch with respect to the provisions that are recommended in that Reporting Interpretations Committee. The other possible reference is the experience from the U.S. market in the accounting for sulfur dioxide. And the requirement for this is to recognize the permits at cost, and they are not allowed to be marked to market. So it is not allowed to be restated to fair value in, you know, the current language. So the main concern for the Australian reporting entities would be what principles to account to use to account for these transactions going forward from 2012. And based on the experience in the EU, the report by PricewaterhouseCoopers and IETA, which is the International Emissions Trading Association, is that there are 15 available methods to use in accounting for emission permits. It can be narrowed down to 6 if we ignore perhaps, you know, classification adjustments. Now, these findings were further reinforced by a report made by Lovell et al. In 2010. So hence, the big question is that in the absence of an accounting guidance, there will be lack of comparability among the liable entities, you know, from 2012 going forward. What is in store for Australia in terms of the fixed price phase? So in the fixed price space, commencing 1st of July 2012, liable entities will be required to accrue a carbon tax payable and as the emission takes place. And even though we don't have existing accounting standards to guide companies or liable entities to take this into account in their financial report, there are existing accounting standards there that can be used in order to account for this transaction. So one particular standard is the AASB 137, which is the provisions, contingent liabilities, and contingent assets. AASB stands for Australian Accounting Standards Board, and that requires the recognition of a liability as the emission takes place. So, and that will only cover scope one, and liable entities basically will be asked to report 75% of their total provisional emissions numbers, and that can be determined based on the calculation that they've done on their ENGER reporting, or perhaps, you know, a reasonable estimation of those emissions if the ENGER reporting is not available. So, I suspect in the first financial period, in 2012 and 2013, one possibility will be that 75% of the emissions will be recognized in the financial reporting period, which covers the first vintage, which is 12-13, and then the remaining 25% will be covering or using permits that is going to be in the succeeding vintage year. So further to that, if there is a shortfall, and they do not surrender enough permits at the end of the first reporting period, there will be what is so-called a unit shortfall charge, okay, which I believe is 130%, you know, based on my reading. And if the entity fails to pay this surcharge, there will be further penalties, which will be an administrative charge and a penalty on the surcharge. So hence, I suppose there are lots of this will discourage entities from not meeting the commitment. I like this particular timetable, which is courtesy of the Carbon Market Institute. And as you can see from this particular slide, it tells you the reporting periods, you know, under ENSURE, and when they are meant to surrender the permits. So the first one would be 75% would be on the 15th of June. This is assuming a June 30 year end. And then the next full surrender will be the 1st of February. In the fixed period phase, by September, most companies would know, you know, what the free units allocated. And at the very bottom of the table is the ENSURE reporting. So you could see that the dates do not coincide. So it will be, I guess, a lot of reporting issues for companies who are not able to incorporate this in this system as a result of difference in timing. So, and this is just assuming a June 30 year end. So for companies having a different year end, they have to look at, you know, how is this is going to affect their reporting requirements. Now, we are still in the fixed price phase. And how will the carbon tax affect liable entities in the fixed price phase? Now, if the tax is incurred to produce a good or an asset, more likely it's going to be capitalized as part of the underlying asset, either as inventory or part of a property, plant, and equipment, if that is the carbon tax was incurred to construct, say, an asset that is used for production. So there are existing accounting standards available to be able to recognize that, and that would be those standards that covers inventories and property, plant, and equipment. Now, there will be other circumstances wherein a carbon tax would be imposed, and if that is the case, then it has to be expensed as incurred. Now, Ilona mentioned earlier about, you know, the characteristic of the permits, because there were a little bit of, I suppose, a debate on how to recognize those permits in the financial statements. So if there is a free permit and there is an asset, what kind of an asset would it be? So would it be recognized as an intangible asset, a financial instrument, or perhaps, you know, a foreign currency? So, but it seems to be that the consensus is that the permit is a non-monetary asset of intangible nature, and therefore it is, you know, recommended that it use the intangible asset standards, which is AASB 138. The reason why it doesn't fit well with the definition of financial instrument is that a permit doesn't satisfy the underlying definition for a financial asset. Hence, there seemed to be a preference to use intangible assets. Now, in terms of purchase and free permits, they will be measured based on the official price, which would be 23 on the first year, so 12, 13, and then 24, 15 on the 14, 15, 13, 14 rather, and then 14, 15, it will be 25, 40. So there's no, I suppose, difficulty in determining or measuring the underlying value of this intangible asset because we have a reference price, which is a fixed price. Now, in terms of the recognition of those free permits, I think the preference is for them to be recognized as a credit to income for those free permits based on the fair value, which is the reference rate. Now, There will be no trading, banking, and borrowing in the fixed price phase. So hence, the worry about having a mismatch between the revenue recognized and the liability recognized in balance sheet and income state will not exist in the fixed price phase. Okay, although it will be problematic when we go to the flexible price period. Okay. Now, what other reporting issues aside from, you know, recognizing it as an asset and recognizing the liability, there will be other reporting issues with respect to, say, the impairment of assets. So if, for instance, carbon tax will now be in place and some of your cash flows will be affected by this, then it means there is an implication in the recoverable amount of some of the assets. So hence, you have to do some impairment testing. So you have to redo your cash flows in these cash-generating units that are going to be affected by the carbon tax. And if that is the case, that there is an impairment in the value of the, in the recoverable amount, then it implies that there will be an impairment in the value of the asset, which will require an adjustment on the expense, which will impact the income statement. Now, there will also be implication with respect to onerous contracts. So carbon tax may imply that some contracts will now be onerous. And if that is the case, they have to recognize it, you know, when it is in place, which is really the 1st of July 2012. And this is required under the standard on provisions, contingent liabilities, and contingent assets. Now, furthermore, there will be some adjustment perhaps on liabilities, on provisions with respect to, for instance, site remediation provisions. So some companies would have site remediation provisions already recorded in their balance sheet as a liability. And if the carbon tax will increase this obligation, then it is required to adjust those provisions accordingly. Now, what about in terms of the flexible price phase? There is no guidance with respect to the flexible price period phase, but the best reference would probably be IFRIC 3 or the UIG 3, which is the International Urgent Issues Group. Now, IFRIC 3 is limited to the cap and trade emission scheme. So it means that other abatement schemes will not be covered by this guidance, which is CDMs or carbon offsets. In summary, IFRIC 3 requires allowances and permits be treated as an intangible asset, which is no different to what I have just discussed on the fixed price phase. Now, allowances issued by the government will be recognized at less than fair value, because at times it will be recognized at nominal amount, or some will be recognizing it at fair value. Now, subsequent measurement gives the liable entities a choice as to whether it's going to be cost basis or a fair value basis. But if there is a change, if you adopt a fair value basis, any changes in the value of the permits will go towards equity, not the profit and loss statement or the income statement. So in short, any changes in value will not impact the profits of the entity. But it's still subject to impairment losses. Now, with respect to the other side, which is the liability side, provision is recognized for obligation to deliver permits and allowances equal to the emissions. So no different from the fixed price period. So it accrues as CO2 is emitted, recognized at fair value, but this time it's through the income statement. And there will be profit and loss impact. So whilst the liability is being remeasured, the asset side is not. Although it's remeasured, you know, the differences are taken through equity. So hence, that is the underlying reason why this UIG3 or the IFRIC3 was withdrawn because the, you know, the business entities didn't want a one-side treatment. So there was an asymmetrical treatment, you know, of these transactions. Okay. What about those free permits that will be distributed? This will give rise to a deferred income at the time of receipt, and then this deferred income will be recognized as revenue, I would suspect, in a systematic basis consistent with the level of emissions. Okay, so the unintended consequences of this particular UIG3 would be the accounting mismatch, wherein allowances are revalued and credited to equity, and liability is measured at fair value with movements to profit and loss. Okay. Now, aside from IFRIC 3, there is what we call the net liability approach. The net liability approach is a plausible approach given that there is no guidance. My experience in the UK ETS is that this is the most popular method. And it's popular because it's simple, less costly. Okay, and emissions rights are only permits are recognized, you know, at nominal amounts, which is usually zero. So there is no asset that is recognized, and then the liability is only recognized when actual emissions exceeds the rights granted. So hence, you only recognize an obligation when you believe you will not be able to, you know, come up with enough permits. Okay, so in terms of the international evidence, based on the research that I've done with the UK ETS reporting and accounting for emission permits, my findings is that there is a lack of guidance that resulted to inconsistency in the financial reporting, lack of comparability between entities, which will undermine investors' confidence in the markets. So there is also inadequate disclosure on the recognition and measurement of carbon emission permits. I've looked into 297 UK companies that were liable entities and came up with about a sample of 100, you know, that had material exposure in the UK ETS. But I end up with only a sample of 20 who have actually disclosed what they have done in their financial reports. So hence, there is an absence of information out there. So, and my observation amongst these 20 companies is that the measurement basis varies for a similar element, and the current policies induces price volatility in the P&L results. And the lack of transparency is as to who is accountable for the covered installations. Hence, there will be certain implications and consequences on the valuation and pricing of equity securities, which we will, you know, experience in Australia if those, you know, lessons that are learned from the UK are not taken into account. So I guess that's all I've got time for.